Today on CityCast Houston.
I have nightmares every night. It just hurts. It does. Because I'm young and I don't deserve this. I'm genuinely a sweet girl.
If you want to run away, don't. It's not worth it. It's not. Like, if I was right there and you had an idea, I would get on my knees and beg a person. Because no kid, nobody should go, not even your worst enemy, nobody should go through what I went through.
Those are the voices of two teenage girls who had their childhood taken away due to sex trafficking right here in Houston. Today, I'm talking to ABC 13 reporter Pooja Lodia about the forgotten group of sex trafficking victims, teenagers, and what's being done to protect them. And just a heads up, this episode might be hard for some listeners to hear due to the sensitive topics discussed. It's Monday, March 11th. I'm Raheel Ramzanli, and here's what Houston's talking about. Pooja, welcome back into CityCast Houston. How are you?
I am so happy to be here, and I'm especially happy to be talking about this story because it is something that means a lot to us.
Yeah, and you did such a great job with
Thank
it, by
you.
The way. I mean, it is incredible. The interviews that you were able to get on camera were just, they were hard to watch, one, but they were so important because these stories need to be told. And look, sex trafficking is something that the city has been focusing on for a while, and there's so many victims of this crime. But you focus on a group that really doesn't get talked a lot about, and that's the teenagers, the younger people that are victims of these crimes. Just tell us about this. Like, what did you learn?
We learned so much. To be honest, we were planning on doing one story, and it turned into multiple stories just because we met these women, we met these young girls, and we were like, wow, we really have to make more out of this, just because, like you said, these are stories that are so often not told. And I think, you know, a lot of times it is so hard to meet some of the younger victims here. And the fact that they were so honest with us and so open and so vulnerable, like I said, we learned so much from them, and we felt like people needed to see and watch.
Yeah. What are some of the things that you learned? What are some of the patterns that you discovered when talking to these younger victims?
I think that was actually the thing that struck us the most while working on these stories, is how similar so many of these stories are. So we interviewed a 13-year-old and we interviewed a 15-year-old. And both of them really got into sex trafficking really in very similar ways. They both had tough childhoods. They both went into foster care, and they both ran away from foster care. When you run away from foster care as a kid, you don't have a lot of options. There's not a lot of ways that you can make money. And sometimes you get stuck around people who may not have the best intentions for you. So both of these girls really kind of got into this not knowing too much of what they were getting into. But what was so interesting is when we talked to some of the older women, you know, women in their 20s and 30s, they had the same stories. So really, there's not much of a difference there between teenagers and older women. It just means that they were stuck in that system for that much longer. But their kind of origin stories were exactly the same. They all were in places in their lives, in their young teens, where they just had nowhere to turn. You know, we talked to one girl, she was at Cy Falls High School, which is, you know, a popular school for a lot of people. She was having a lot of trouble with her parents. She started dating a guy who was not good for her. She dropped out of school and at that point just had no other options. And I think once you get in this situation, it is so hard to get out for multiple reasons. You know, many of these women have been arrested many times, so it's really hard for them to go out and find jobs and to find other things. Many of them just don't have friends and family who they can rely on. So they're sort of stuck in a system that they want to get out of, but they don't know how to get out of because they just don't see any other options in their lives.
What was the youngest age that you came across or heard about with these young girls on the street?
The youngest girl we talked to was 13, but she talked about girls as young as 10.
And the reason I'm asking you that is if a man is picking up a prostitute, right? And I know the 13-year-old you talked to was open about that these men knew her age. as a man, like, how do you not do something, right? How do you not report this? I don't know if you had a chance to interview these Johns. Johns are guys who are picking up the prostitutes. How do you not do something? Like, I'm getting emotional thinking about this. Like, how do you come across a girl and not do something about this and continue with what you were planning on doing?
That's, I feel emotional talking about it too. I don't understand. And to be honest, we're hoping to be able to explore that part of this story, perhaps in other stories. I would love to be able to talk to some of these Johns, you know, find out what is going through their heads. Because, I mean, even if a 13-year-old isn't honest about their age, you know that they are underage. When you talk about kids that young, I don't understand. I mean, this 13-year-old we talked to, and even the 15-year-old said, yes, we told them our ages, we were honest about it, and they just didn't care. It wasn't even a question. It wasn't even a concern to them. And I don't understand that. I don't understand what's going on there.
Are these younger women targeted more because they're more impressionable? Was there something that you found that these pimps, right, as they're called on the streets, were targeting these younger girls because they could get them into the game?
I honestly think so. And I think that's what these people look for. I think pimps and people who take advantage of girls and even older women, I think they are able to figure out who is at their most vulnerable. Who is going to be the person with no other options who is going to go along with what I say because they don't have anyone else to turn to? I mean, these are not girls who can call their parents. These are not girls who have supportive systems around them. And I think for those who are looking to exploit, they know that. And I think that's really terrifying and really sad because, I mean, these girls are not in these situations due to any of their own actions. I think that was one of the things when talking to both the 13-year-old and 15-year-old, it got me emotional because they're now receiving help and they kept talking about sort of learning from the consequences of their actions. And I get that. And I think it's important to learn and grow. But when you're 13, your brain isn't even fully formed yet. Are you really making decisions? Not to mention, I mean, the older women, if you're addicted to drugs, are you really making your own decisions to the point to where you are able to make logical, healthy choices? I don't think so. So I think the idea that this is a choice for a lot of people is, it's just not true. Because I think when you're 13 years old and are homeless, you're not making choices.
No.
You're doing whatever you need to do to survive. And like I said, you're not even mature enough to be able to make those decisions.
And once they make those decisions, right, they're like, I just need to survive. I just need to figure out something, right? And then they start seeing this money come in. But the 13-year-old that you talked to, this was another heartbreaking thing on top of everything that she talked about. You know, there's some nights where she's making a lot of money and she wouldn't get any of it.
I got like $10,000 a night maybe. And I remember getting raped a lot. Like men would rip off my clothes and take advantage of me. And it got to the point where I didn't really care anymore. I wasn't really happy with what I was living, but I didn't care. So I just got used to it and kept going.
That's what I heard from every single one of them. Every woman I spoke with said that they didn't keep most of the money. Wow. I mean, they kept enough money to where they were able to survive. But that's it. I mean, they're not even taking that money home at the end of the night. They're giving it to another person who then distributes however much is deemed necessary back to them. But I also think we can't discount sort of the emotional toll that all of this sort of plays on these women and children in terms of, you know, when you've been doing something that is so hard and so sort of heartbreaking, you don't feel good about yourself either. You don't feel confident enough to walk away. You don't feel like you have enough to offer other people. And, you know, maybe some of that comes from the reactions from, you know, you tell somebody that you are out working the street, maybe the reaction you get isn't a positive one. And that just continues to sort of seep into your psyche. and all of a sudden you feel worthless. And so it's also a psychological game on so many levels. And all that does is trap these people in the system even more.
The 15-year-old that you spoke to, she had been drugged by her pimp and had almost 8 overdoses.
This homeless dude I thought I could trust. He drugged me up really bad with K2. It had fentanyl in it. Then I went to the dry cleaner. I was like, can y'all please call? They said they didn't have a phone working. They said, we can't help you. And he just said, get out. He was telling me to get out. And he pushed me out the door and locked it. Then when I finally made it to the veterinary, I dropped at the door and they called the ambulance. The ambulance told the vet people, my caseworker, if I wouldn't have made it there in time, I would have been dead.
When she goes to the hospital, right, why were more flags not raised? Like, why didn't the staff intervene? Did she talk about that at all?
So we have spoken to medical professionals. We've also spoken to children who tell us that a lot of times when these girls and when these women are going into the hospital with overdoses and showing signs of sex trafficking, they are then reaching out to authorities. They're reaching out to foster homes. They are working to get them help. But a lot of times that help isn't making that much of a difference because some of these girls really are stuck in this system. So there are efforts being made, but I think the problem is this is really a system that needs to change. This really is something that has to be multi-pronged. And at this point, it's just not been as effective as it should be.
Houston's original neighborhood downtown is for everyone, and it's poppin'. It's our open-hearted home for our biggest celebrations and our treasured hidden gems. From the world-class theater district to incredible green spaces like Discovery Green, downtown is the place to be. In fact, more people visited downtown Houston last year than the entire population of Dallas, Fort Worth, Austin, and San Antonio combined. There's no better time to live downtown than now. From starter apartments to luxury lofts, everyone can take advantage of the arts, business, culture, entertainment, food, and recreation. Now, you might think of downtown as only the heartbeat of Houston's regional economy, which it is, but there's so much more to it, including free events throughout the week with Downtown Houston Plus. From the Market Square Park Farmers Market every Saturday to Yoga Flow every Wednesday, you can find something to do and eat and watch in downtown Houston. Learn more at downtownhouston.org. Downtown Houston, get energized and revived.
Now, the law enforcement side of things, I know a lot of agencies around the city and surrounding areas have done a lot to not only stop sex trafficking, human trafficking, prostitution by shutting down parts of the city, doing sting operations, all of that. Is there anything special being done by law enforcement to get these teenagers out of the game?
I've covered what's been going on Bissonnette for years because it's always been a major crime problem. It has not only been a major problem with prostitution, but there's just been robberies and burglaries. You know, that area has just been really unsafe over the years. And I think that there's always been an impression here in Houston that police don't care, that they're allowing this to happen, that they're not doing anything. So over the years, they have tried multiple things. They have tried banning certain people from those areas. They've tried shutting down some of the motels because those motels are also part of this system. So many of them are by the hour. You know, the people who run those motels know what's going on. They've tried, just making a ton of arrests, arresting anybody who is either picking up prostitutes or is prostituting or trying to go after the pimps. None of that has worked. None of that has worked. And I spoke with a commander, actually a Houston Police Department commander. He talked about how they would go out there, they would arrest 100 people. They would spend the next 4 hours, you know, taking those people in, intake, into jail and things like that. They'd go back to the area. It didn't make a difference at all. Some of these people would be back later on that day.
Well, obviously, prostitution is illegal, right? So they are arresting these women. But wouldn't it make more sense to just focus on the pimps and kind of cut the head off the snake, you know, like as an outsider looking in? Why are they arresting these young teenagers and women who are trapped in the game instead of trying to get these pimps?
So I think that has been the strategy, and that's really been a shift for law enforcement. We've heard that from the sheriff's office, HPD, as well as many of the constables. Mm. That has been a shift over the past, say, 10 years or so, trying to move more against the pimps and the Johns rather than the women, trying to offer women help. Because, again, these are women who need help. I think, again, though, it goes back to this idea that even if you give these women help, a lot of times they're back out there. Just because, you know, you give them help and you tell them, hey, you don't have to do this. But then what else are they going to do? They're stuck.
What are the resources that are available for these women, these young girls, right, who do want to get out? Did they talk about any of that? Did you uncover anything? Is the city doing anything? Because there has to be something, right?
There are resources out there. There are a ton of really great nonprofits. So while we were working on this story, we actually worked with a woman named Kathy Griffin. I don't know if you know her. She is, I mean, I hope she's listening because in my opinion, she is just a goddess. Like she is a great, great part of our community. She is a former prostitute. She's a former drug addict, but she has been sober and out of that lifestyle for more than 20 years. She now works with Precinct 1 Constable's Office. She works with the prison over in Huntsville, and she runs support group meetings actually every Wednesday afternoon. And if you ever have a chance to go to one of these, it was incredible. Where women and girls go. Some of them are ordered to go there due to other, you know, sort of court-ordered programs, and some of them go there on their own, and they talk about those resources, and she really helps them. And I think what's so amazing about her is she has been there. That's actually the name of her nonprofit. It's called Been There, Done That. She gets it. She doesn't have to be explained, you know, all of these things. She understands what they're going through and she understands the resources that are available for them. But even within her organization, she comes across so many people who just have a tough time getting out.
Look, it's a hard topic. It's something that the city has been dealing with for a long time. Heck, prostitution is one of the oldest businesses in mankind, right? Like it's always been there. But our city has been dealing with this. You know, we're number one when it comes to victims of human trafficking, sex trafficking. With all that being said, with everything you just laid out, I want to get your opinion on this. And I don't know if you're allowed to give this or not, okay? Because you are a journalist. So I'm going to help you. I'm going to give you an out, okay, Pooja?
I have too many opinions. That's the problem.
Yeah. Do you think we'll ever solve the prostitution issue here in the city?
No, I don't. I don't think it's going to be solved anywhere. I really don't. I think we're going to see it in different ways. Maybe we'll see things move more online. Maybe we'll see things move sort of off of the streets. But no, I think people are always going to take advantage of others. And I think that what these nonprofit organizations and what these law enforcement organizations are doing is just trying to help individual people. That's the most we can do. Trying to look at somebody, offer them help, and say there is a way out and hopefully improve individual lives. But I think as a whole, prostitution and human trafficking, it's not going anywhere. It's not. And I hate that. You know, I don't want that to be the truth. But I think anybody you ask, even when you ask police officers, when you ask those who really have studied this subject, they'll tell you the same thing.
That's hard to hear, but you know, it is important to hear that this is something that we just have to try to clean up what we can. Pooja, I have to give you credit here. That was incredible stuff. To get these stories out was just powerful. It was something that I think everyone needed to see and hear, and just great work, Pooja.
Thank you so much. It really did mean a lot to us. I know I've said this a couple of times, but those were the toughest interviews I think I've ever done. And I've been doing this for a long time.
Of course.
My photographer, Francisco Barragan, and I, our jaws were just dropped. We could not believe their honesty and just how much they trusted us to tell these stories. So it really means a lot to me. Thank you.
You did a great job telling those stories. Pooja, thank you so much for joining us.
Thank you.
That was Pooja Lodia. You can watch her entire series with the link in our show notes. That will do it for today. Thank you for listening, and I hope you learned something new.
there's no video, right? Like, I don't need to say, okay.
No, you'll be fine.
Okay, good.